The following is a Super Network production with Super Marcy.
But no! Like, I'll have a frozen Coke, no, the machine's broken.
The terrible Australian Be Jermaine.
And this was meant to be a kid's movie, right?
It contains coarse language.
Because, like, the guy back there in the office, he's...
Mature themes.
He's the BDSM kid, now you can have your own red room.
Potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Listener discretion is advised. Please find us at supermarcy.com and subscribe to us via Patreon at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. Enjoy.
Come on, Peter. Here's your suit.
It's heartening to see so many strange new faces here today. I know my mom would be very touched and probably a little suspicious. My mother was a very secretive and private woman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another installment of the Super Podcast right here at the Super Network at supermarcy.com. I am your host, Super Marcy, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, the one and only Bede the Terrible. Hello, Bede.
I'm good, thanks, Marcy. How are you?
Doing all right, Bede. Thank you very much.
That's good to hear. Just sort of had a bit of a busy day today and had work, which is always keeps me preoccupied. But outside of that, things have been pretty good, and I'm looking forward to doing this second controversial films themed episode of our fan voted audio commentaries.
Yes. So what we decided for April is we'll have some extra movies on the fan voted monthly poll, which you can find at the Super Network Facebook group. And we thought, okay, whatever comes second will be a bonus episode. So this is our bonus episode. However, this movie was tied for second place with, was A Clockwork Orange, I believe.
Yes, it was. Yes.
Yes. So we did a tiebreaker poll and Hereditary won the poll. And now I'm wondering why we put this movie on the list, because I'm too scared to watch it.
Indeed. Like, I think our fans of the show kind of want to torture us in a way. And it's not to say that we don't like this movie. In fact, we both love this movie. But knowing what Hereditary is as a film, this is going to be a very heavy watch for us to do. That's
yes.
For sure.
Yes, I've only seen Hereditary the once, which was at a screening I went to with you, and this will be my second time watching it, and I'm kind of terrified. Not because I'm scared of the movie, it's just Hereditary is a very uncomfortable movie.
Indeed, it's and also not just for the fact of how scary and provocative of a horror film it is, but it's also a very raw of grief and family, and the stuff how it handles it is pretty heavy stuff, probably compared to even more so than most dramas I've seen over the last few years. So it's definitely something that while I'm looking forward to talking about this film, I am also at the same time also very anxious giving the subject matter of this film as well.
Yeah, well, without much further ado, we'll get right into this commentary. And once again, thank you to everyone who voted. I kind of hate you for voting for this, but here we are. I hope you enjoy your feature presentation. Now, Bede, just walk us through the rules of a commentary, and hopefully most of our listeners by now know those rules.
Indeed. For all of our listeners out there who have never listened to any of our audio commentaries, first of all, how dare you? what you need to do is, if you have a copy of the film, whether it be on DVD, Blu-ray, or even somewhere on a streaming service, what we're going to do is we're going to count down from five. And when I say go, play the movie at that moment, and that way our audio commentary will be in sync with the film. But I'm pretty sure, like, regardless, if you don't have the movie on hand, I think the audio commentary itself will still be a pretty good listen to on its own, regardless if you're watching the, if you're not watching the film. So we've got our copy of the film ready. So once I count down from five and say go, that's when you play the movie. So Marcy, are you ready?
I am ready. Let's do this.
All right, I'll count us down and then we go when I say go. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
And we're off.
Our studio can now.
Yes.
Now, Marcy, I know how I first saw this film because I was, I heard about this film when it premiered at the Sundance Film Festival. I had no idea what it was about. All I knew was that it was a horror film that starred Toni Collette and Gabriel Byrne, and it had a massive, a lot of buzz. So I decided that I was like deliberately decided not to read anything else about this film. I wanted to go in blind. And so I ended up going to an early screening of the film. And let's just say, though, okay, first of all, we get like this opening little passage here, which looks like an obituary.
Yeah, it's basically an obituary for Ellen Taper Lee, passed away after prolonged illness at her daughter Annie's house. just goes through who she was and when the funeral is. Continue your story.
So I went to the screening with our mutual friend Shane, and
hi Shane.
So we went to that, and let's just say it was probably, without a doubt, one of the most nerve-wracking, most anxious-ridden, like, film screenings I have ever gone to. Like, legit, from the very beginning to the end, my hands were legit gripping to the sides of my seat. And by the end of the movie, I, like, had to let go of my seat because my hands were so, like... like still stuck in that pose of like in claws, you know, and because that was how intense it was throughout this whole film. And I think, and for me, I was legit terrified of this film, and I was not expecting it going into it. I suppose in a way that was probably a good thing, but I just knew, like, after this film, like, I'd seen probably one of the best horror films I've seen in quite a number of years. Like, what I would say is a true blue masterpiece of the genre. Yeah.
Well, look, I think this is a great film. It's an excellent film, and Ari Aster has such a talent for making some very uncomfortable films. And this is, it's the only way I can describe it. It's so uncomfortable, but it has so much to say. There's so much beneath the surface with this film. There's clues and all sorts everywhere. And the framing of this film, I think, works masterfully. And this shot right here, which goes from, like, the, what do you call it? The
dollhouse.
Yeah, like the little house miniature zooms in, but then it goes to the actual real kind of, you know, part.
Bedroom.
Yeah. So I think that's actually really clever, and that's a theme, at least a visual theme, that we see throughout the film, which I find really clever. And I think Ari Aster has one of the most unique visual styles as well. But he also works with such an incredible sound design that the whole thing, everything just makes you very unnerved and very... It's so unnerving, and it really gets under your skin, and that's what this movie does so hard. And so you took me to see this. It would have been your second time watching it.
Yeah, it was.
I think you were just waiting for my reaction throughout this whole movie, because I'm just sitting there like, what is going on? I'm like, what? Huh? And then I think you got more enjoyment out of my reactions to the movie than the movie for that screening.
Indeed. And that was the thing, though. Like, I wasn't sure. Like, that's the thing, though. Like, not reading up what this film was about. All I knew was just it was about a family. That was probably the only thing I had about it.
I just knew the title, who was in it. That was about it. I don't think I really knew anything at all.
Well, that's the thing, though. Like, you're right in that Ari Aster, being the fact that this is his debut film, like, it's probably one of the most confident and most well-crafted debuts I probably have seen in the past few years, because this feels like a film that has been made by someone who has made many feature films up to this point. But the fact that, I mean, up to this point, he had already made quite a number of short films.
Mm.
But the fact that this is his first feature is just astonishing to me.
Yeah, I agree with that so much. And again, even with his short films, he chooses subject matters that are very, very uncomfortable. Indeed. That's all I'm going to say about that. I'm not going to get into detail.
Let's just say, if you ever watch one of his short films called The Strange Thing About the Johnsons, let's just say you're going to go into a very much a wild ride with that short.
Mm. Now, I guess I can ask you, because you'll probably know, has the actress that plays Charlie actually been in anything else since this?
I think so. Let me just have a look. And the actress, of course, her name is Millie Shapiro.
Thank you.
And I believe, and I'm just getting her Wikipedia page. Well, this is so far as her first and only film thus far. But she has, started an episode of a show called Spitting Up Together. Oh, sorry, Splitting Up Together. Then appeared on as a guest judge on a show called The Boulay Brothers Dragula, and also did a voice role on a show called J.J. Villard's Fairy Tales. So, but she's actually came from theatre, because she actually played Matilda in Matilda the Musical, and also Sally Brown in You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
Very cool.
I don't know what else she's got coming up yet, but yeah, well, that was the thing. Like, I know this was like her first film, but Millie Shapiro has such a really fascinating on-screen presence. And I know she's the complete opposite of what her character of, let me see, I forgot her character's name.
Charlie,
yes. But she just really inhabits this character extremely well.
It's such a different and interesting performance, and she does have such a compelling on-screen presence that I hope she is in more stuff.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And sorry to cut you off, but it's remarkable to think, like, this is her first film, like, wow.
Oh, yeah. And, like, it's such a really interesting sort of creepy kid role as well.
It's not the quite traditional sort of creepy kid that you normally see. It's very different.
And exactly.
That's what this film is. It's very freaking different from just about everything.
Oh, yeah. And I think one of the things I love about this film is that we're kind of in the space of, like, how the family is that everything that's happening to them throughout this whole film, we're seeing it from their point of view. So I know there are some people out there who don't like this film and feel like where some of the story goes later on in the film feels completely out of nowhere. But I think that's by design, because we are basically seeing all this terrifying stuff happen from the point of view of this family. Yeah. And so we don't. But the thing is, though, it's not like it's just thrown in there for horror's sake. It actually is built up to it, because the interesting thing about this film is going back to rewatch it and seeing all the build up to where this film goes in the last half, because all the hints are there. Like, for example, in that being that this is an audio commentary and we're going to spoil stuff, we find out later in the movie that the Toni Collette's mother was actually the head of a cult. And she was, like, sort of the main leader of it. And she wants to, her and her followers want to bring a demon from hell into the world by the name, I think it was Paimon or Paimon, I believe.
Paimon?
Yeah. And they want to use Peter as the kind of the human vessel of Paimon. And if I butchered the name incorrectly, I apologize. But the thing is, though, when you kind of, as with this scene, Charlie is talking about how much she misses her grandmother because she has spent more time with her grandmother than her actual mum. Because her mum pretty much says, basically, since Charlie was born, her mother pretty much just snatched her and just pretty much kind of claimed her as her own. And she tried to do that with Peter, but Toni Collette's character didn't want anything to do with that. So basically, in a way, Toni kind of sacrificed her own daughter to this mother. But the thing is, though, Charlie already has the spirit of payment in her, but since she's a girl and they need a boy to be the actual vessel, Charlie's kind of like this kind of tortured soul. Like, she sees things that nobody else can see, and she acts in ways that are not normal, mainly because she's got a spirit, a demon inside her that's kind of got control of her personality. It's sort of like these two in the two souls in the one body, pretty much.
And there's so many little hints and clues throughout this film that it's very fascinating to watch it again and just really just look at it and to see and pick up on those clues, because they're all very much there. They're just hidden in plain sight.
Indeed. Like,
which
even
is very
the,
clever.
Yeah, even like the early scene where we're at the funeral, like Toni Collette's character says, like, oh, it's interesting to see, like, I didn't realize my mum had so many friends. That's because every outside of the family, everyone else there who's at the funeral is other members of the cult.
And we will see them again later.
Yeah, especially the guy who smiles at Charlie, because we see him definitely later on in the movie. And that's sort of thing I think is interesting about this film, is just basically it's a film about family, like about how trying to, pretty much in a way, it's also about trauma, because Annie has her own issues with her mother, because we find out that her brother committed suicide, which is very clear, because in a way it hints that her mother tried to use her brother as that kind of vessel for payment, but he killed himself before he did it. And of course, I believe he's, and I could be completely wrong, because like I haven't seen this movie in a little bit, but Annie's father, I believe, also might have killed himself as well. Because the thing is about how this cult sort of gets payment into Peter's body. Like, I know it's worrying this way before anything else, but here comes a creepy scene.
Yeah, that's not creepy at all. I'm not uneasy right now.
Being that we just saw that, I guess, an apparition of Annie's mother.
Stop scaring me.
That's the thing, though. I think that's what's great about Ari Aster as a filmmaker, is that he goes for more of these subtle scares. Like, he does jump scares occasionally, but they're very effective.
I feel like everything he does is with a purpose, and you can really feel that. And this, there is a purpose, and I don't like seeing it because it's very just messed up. Just saying.
There's a lot of, because all the miniatures, because like Annie creates all these miniatures for a museum. And I like how with the miniatures, they kind of show kind of in a way like the backstory of like her family. Like the one we just saw, it's like, obviously, it's her breastfeeding Charlie, but then you see her mother also pulling out one of her breasts and almost like, I want to feed this child too, because I think, in a way, payment, she wants to feed Charlie by letting payment go through her into Charlie, in a way.
Yeah, and all the doting on Charlie is pretty much because of payment. And I was going to say something and it just completely left me. So going back to what you said earlier about what the film's about, it's very much this deconstruction of the family unit as well as loss and grief. And it just happens to, you know, have a demon involved in it and a cult.
Yeah. And you could also say whether mental illness as well, because as the film progresses and after, spoiler alert, when Charlie dies and how that grief affects Annie, you could almost feel like she's starting to panic because she thinks she's starting to become like her mum. And she feels like her mum, like her whole family, her mum, her dad and her brother, were all kind of must have been mentally ill in some way or crazy, and she feels like she's going down that same road as well. But then we find out there's a lot more to that. And I like the fact that, you know, this film kind of dives into these specific themes while using at the same time as this kind of demonic possession kind of angle in a way. And cult.
I find it interesting that on the blackboard, what's written behind it is very interesting because it says themes, and there's themes written on the board for what, you know, they're discussing in class. But I find that very interesting that it's very much there. And if you're looking at it, it does say like relationships. And I think that's a big part of this movie too, which is the human relationships to each other, which obviously has to do more with Toni Collette's character, with Charlie, her son, I forgot the character's name, and her mother.
Peter. Yeah. Of course, Annie's cutting off the head of this pigeon.
Charlie, not Annie.
Sorry, I said Charlie.
You said Annie.
I don't recall that.
I'm pretty sure you did.
All right, well, if I have, then it's Charlie.
It is Charlie. You goof.
And of course, more creepy people staring at Charlie. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing, though. You see the scene and you're thinking, what is that? Is that a ghost? A spectre?
Yeah,
but
you don't really know because did this film just throws you in?
Yeah, but then you realize, oh, that's a cult member.
Yeah, like from this point of view, you realize, like when I was first watching it, I'm like, what the bloody hell?
Well, that's the thing I like about the opening shot where it's like you zoom into this miniature house and then go into, it kind of cuts in the Peter's room. And I've read some theories that in a lot of ways that kind of symbolizes that something bigger than this family is watching them.
Or controlling their every move in life, which they really are.
Yeah, like as if they were the miniatures of this kind of dollhouse.
See, what would have made this just perfect is if the miniatures were the Sylvanian family figures. Just saying.
Yes. And of course, there's like a symbol of a cultish symbol just marked on the floor there of the grandmother's room. Not creepy at all.
No, not creepy whatsoever.
But we got to talk about, I think one of the main reasons why, I mean, as effective and brilliant as this film is, I think what makes this film is without a doubt Toni Collette's performance as Annie, which I think for me is probably up there as one of the best performances I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. This is an incredible performance from her. And she should have won, not just been nominated, but won every single frickin' award for that year.
I agree. Like, it was one of those ones when performances, like, when it came out, everyone was like, oh, she's a shoo-in for an Oscar nomination. And once award season came around, like, she did get quite a number of nominations, different spots, but mainly in kind of critic circles and stuff. But any of the kind of big major ones, like, she pretty much got shut out, which I think is completely, like, shameful, because like this the year before Get Out got tons of Oscar nominations, and also The Shape of Water, well, not technically a full-on horror film, but was a big genre film. And it's kind of a shame, like, they, like, the Oscars kind of missed over her performance, because for me, I mean, as great as the performance that were nominated for Best Actress that year, Toni Collette A should have been one of those five nominees, and two should have fucking won.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
I was going to say, because, you know, Toni Collette, she's been an incredible actress who has had such an amazing career. And, of course, she's an Australian, so we got to support our girl. but she's always been brilliant. And I like the fact that I was reading up trivia before that she had done a ton of really heavy films. And she just was like, oh, I want to take a break from doing kind of heavy stuff for a while and do much more lighter and sort of more comedic fare. And then she got the script for this and it was like, was so blown away by it. It's like, you know what? I got to do this movie. And watching this film, and you can understand why, because it's one of those rare female roles that is so brilliantly well crafted, whether it's in like a horror film or just in any film in particular.
Mm. Yeah, it's definitely one of the best performances in many, many years. I mean, and as much praise as we give her, like, I think everyone in the cast is pretty fucking good. So, just putting it out there.
Yeah, I mean, Alex Wolff as Peter and
Millie
Shapiro as Charlie, they're both excellent. And I also got to give a bit of a shout out to, you know, Gabriel Byrne, who kind of plays like, maybe his character isn't as showy as the rest of the family, but he's kind of the glue that kind of keeps it all together, because he's definitely the one with everything that happens in this film, he's the one who's trying to keep this family together.
Yeah. And, just another great performance that he has done.
Indeed.
Oh, sorry. I've got to adjust myself because my back hurts.
That's the thing. And also, I think this, I guess this group, this is sort of like, now that she's at this sort of grief counseling group, like it goes going into her relationship with her mum and explaining, like, you know, despite, you know, her being a mother and all the horrible things, she doesn't feel sad about her mum's death. And it's kind of interesting. So, and of course, she goes in the backstory of, like, in a way, she blames her mother for everything that happened to her brother and dad.
And it's interesting that, you know, that the people in the cult sort of, I don't know, I guess they would have planned for her to attend this so they could be there to, you know, I can't wink, so nudge, nudge, well, wink, wink, befriend her and get her to do things.
Well, I believe, like, I don't know if this was just before this scene, but I think she did get a letter in the mail about this meeting. Mm. So it's definitely, everything is definitely, that happens throughout this film is definitely orchestrated by this cult. And I can understand some people thinking, like, oh, it's a bit, like, some certain things might feel like they'd have to really sort of set everything up in a way for everything to work. Like, what if something, but I think, like, everything just is set up pretty well. And I think when you rewatch this film on a repeated viewings, you can see all the sides.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, if she didn't attend this grief counseling session, they would have found another way to get through to her in the way that they do with this. So just this, exactly. I think it just is more like one of the things that worked, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, why would you have your weed all over your desk like that? What a fucking idiot.
Especially when you're like, your family can just easily walk in.
I mean, who has it strewn all over their desk? Put it in a box or a container, mate. Bloody hell.
Oh, another creepy moment. You see breath out there.
I like with these shots, you get very confused as to what is going to be a miniature and what isn't a miniature.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It definitely, like, it's another one of those visual things that, like, spins you out. And I really don't understand what Payman / Charlie wants with the head of a pigeon thing.
Well, it kind of, in a way, foreshadows, like, her cutting off the pigeon's head.
Well, it foreshadows what happens to her very soon, but, you know.
Exactly.
But
and of course,
but what is the point of her doing this weird shit? I don't know.
And of course, now she's seeing this weird light just flickering around this room. I honestly think that is Payman. Kind of making his presence known. Like, he can't do anything until he really, like, she can see him. And because later on in the movie, he can't do anything until he fully possesses a body. Like, when he only can possess someone's body when they're at their lowest point. Like they have to, that's why this cult needs to kind of take this family down to their lowest point before, you know, Payman can take over Peter. And that's the thing. It's not just they have to, like, all the members of the family, and then that way they can eliminate all of them. So, and then finally, Peter, being the last one, is fully taken over.
And I just don't understand what Charlie / Payman was doing, but anyway.
Just being creepy, Marcy, just being very creepy.
And I do this. I get that, you know, Annie is quite messed up in the head at the moment. But why does she insist Peter take his sister to a party when he's like 17 and she's a few years younger than him? Like, clearly it's not going to be the safest place for your younger sister. That's very, very, very just... Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's it. This is definitely kind of a lapse in judgment on Annie's part. And I like the fact that later on in this very big sort of confrontational scene at the dinner later on, which we will see, Peter does use that judgment as his ammunition to hurt Annie. Because, like, if she never sent Charlie to go with Peter, then none of this would have ever happened.
Pretty much. And I think it kind of demonstrates, like, that decision, and here's the weird cult shit, that Annie is going through a lot and she's not going to have the best judgment on things, and that this is a big lapse in judgment from her. So I think, yeah, while it works for the plot, obviously, but they could have, you know, easily figured out a different way. I think it just definitely goes through with these themes of, like, loss and grief and how it affects everyone.
Well, that's also, like, Annie thinks, like, oh, well, Charlie needs to hang out with more kids, regardless what their age. And she probably thinks, like, other kids, maybe ones that are closer to her age, are going to be there. And that's why she wants her to go with Peter. And it's very clear Charlie doesn't want to go, but actually neither of them. Peter doesn't want to go. Charlie doesn't want to go. But, of course, Annie keeps insisting that they go. But I think what's interesting, though, about this film is... Jeez, Marcy, why did you do that? one of the creepiest sounds since that sound from Ju-on the Grudge. And, of course, they just pass a pulse. Post that has the
has some Payman symbols on it.
That's the thing. I guess, like I said, like a lot of the stuff is very much orchestrated by the cult and also Payman as well. But I guess I can see some people kind of saying, like, it has to take a lot of leaps, because like later on, like, to make sure that, you know, Charlie dies. Like, they have to put an animal corpse out in the middle of the road, and so that Peter has to, like, steer clear of it. And, of course, Charlie gets waxed the side of the pole.
I think everything that happens is just orchestrated by them, like, having nuts where she's got a nut allergy. Something purposefully orchestrated by the cult, because I believe that's what they do.
Yeah. I would even say Payman is an influence. Like, even though he can't fully take over Charlie's body, he definitely can at least orchestrate her actions. Like, even though she's got a peanut allergy and she sees the peanuts, well, she sees a cake and she... But in a way, like, she just goes and eats the cake anyway. So you could even say, like her, the voice inside her, which obviously would be Payman, is kind of say, I'll go eat that cake, you know, all that. So, damn it, Marcy, stop doing that. But then again, like, she sees the peanuts and probably doesn't think, oh, there's, you know, like, peanuts in the cake. But at the same time, she'll have to eat that. So, again, it's one of those things, like, Like, you have to sort of, like, orchestrate every little detail. And I can see some people saying it's almost like it takes a bit of a leap for all these things to happen.
I just noticed a chick in the background had a kitten on her shirt, and it looked like the Zoom cat filter.
Oh, jeez. And, of course, she's eating the cake right about now.
Mm. I guess she didn't see it had nuts in it, because we saw them cutting it, but those two weren't there.
Yeah, that is true.
Mm.
You could even say, like, the cult... Like, I could also imagine, like, some people at this party could also be members of the cult, too.
Mm, that's what I had sort of thought was possible.
And they brought the cakes.
Mm. As we do when we do a commentary, I got to let it keep running. I just have to turn the light on because I can't see anything.
Indeed.
Bede, you have to just carry on without me for 30 seconds.
Exactly. Now, while Marcy's off turning the light on, pretty much like Peter's just off getting stoned.
That that bong water is fucking dirty. That's better, I can see again.
What's the thing, though? Like, even despite, you know, how odd Charlie is, you can easily tell that Peter does care about his sister.
Mm. Aww. Now he feels like a piece of shit.
Mm. Especially leaving his sister on his own.
On her own.
On her own, sorry. Apologies. That's the thing, though. Like, all this is, like, could easily just be avoided if they had, what is it, an epidural pen?
An EpiPen, yeah.
And yeah, just to, like, you know, stop her allergy.
Mm. Which is weird, because when you have one of those allergies, you generally have one of those with you.
Or at least if there's one in the car or somewhere like that. And it's interesting that they didn't bring one along with the... Now, here, of course, here we come to the most, the infamous
this
scene.
This is just so intense. I was definitely not fucking expecting this when it happened, and I think my reaction made your day.
It did, and I'll tell you this, seeing this movie for a huge crowd was completely, like, I don't think anyone expected this to happen.
No. I'm like, what? Oh, her head fell off.
Her head fell off.
Her head fell off. It's well, like, whoa.
Like, when this scene happened, like, the whole audience legit gasped.
Yeah.
Because nobody expected that to happen. And
no.
I've never seen anything like that in a movie ever.
I was so stunned. I think I just sat there and went to you, What just happened?
Like, and I love this.
She dead?
And I love this kind of follow up because how Peter reacts in this scene, anyone who is in the same situation probably would react.
It's just like he's pure shock.
Pure shock. Like he's not thinking at all.
Yeah, he's not like there at all.
He's checked out pretty much.
The lights are off.
Yeah.
Mm.
And poor Charlie, she'll never be the head of a major corporation.
Womp, womp, womp.
I suppose she was a bit too headstrong.
Womp, womp, womp.
All right, I'll stop with the head jokes now. Well, that's the thing, though. I think what another reason why this scene was effective because the marketing. Once I actually saw the trailers for this movie afterwards, the whole marketing built itself around Charlie.
Mm.
Like, the trailers kind of focused a lot on her, and I think a lot of people just assume, like, oh, she's going to be, like, the main character.
Mm.
And also with horror films, like, it's a taboo thing to actually kill off a kid in a horror film. Like, very taboo. And so I think, like, a lot of people did not expect this moment to happen. And it's brilliant on the market. From both Ari Aster and the marketing team, because it was so effective at like keeping the secrets of this film.
Mm. And it's still just like, whoa.
Mm.
Like, wow. That they just did that. It's like, yeah, they did.
They just did that.
They just did and, that.
And we're here on the edge of our seat, and how what follows afterwards is so masterfully done because again, he's in total shock.
Mm.
He can't comprehend what just happened.
No.
And the fact that he just parks out the front, his headless daughter's body is still sticking out of the car, and he just goes straight to bed.
You mean sister, not daughter?
I said sister.
You said daughter.
I said sister.
I'm pretty sure you said daughter.
I don't know. I'm tired. Leave me alone.
We'll find out when we listen back to the recording.
Exactly. But anyways, sister. and then, of course, he goes to bed. And then, of course, the next scene we hear is just basically like the hearing the parents discover her body.
Like, this movie's like, what's the worst thing someone could deal with? All right, so there's all this sorts of mixed weird emotions with the death of a family member. Let's up the ante and just have an accidental death of the young daughter.
Hmm.
Because it's not fucked up enough.
Exactly.
Mm.
And this is where you sort of get more on edge and anxious.
Because now anything goes in this movie.
Oh, yeah. And also you're waiting for Annie and her husband to find that body.
Yeah. You're like, what's happened? What the hell? There's a screaming.
Mm.
And he's just, there's still nothing there. Nothing at all.
Mm.
No, I forgot that I need to see that. That poor child.
I think that was another thing, again, that got such a reaction. Like, any other filmmaker was like, oh, well, we know her head was decapitated off from that pole. We don't need to see anything. And Ari Aster's like, nope, I'm going to show you the head with ants all over it.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez, Marcy, stop that.
Ugh. Just so, like, and it's very similar with Midsommar in that, and obviously spoilers if you haven't seen it, it's very graphic in a lot of scenes that deal with sacrifice, I will say.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
And there are a lot of similarities, of course, between the two films. They both deal with cults in their own way. Like, the cult in Midsommar, you kind of know upright from the very beginning, and this one's kind of more in the background, kind of slowly coming into the light and showing themselves.
And Annie pretty much hasn't stopped screaming at all.
Mm. Mm.
She's just horrible.
And the funny thing is, this bit was in the trailer and nobody put two and two together.
No.
Because being that it's like, oh, that's a small coffin, nobody would have thought about it.
Mm.
But I think what I love about Ari Aster as a filmmaker, both with this and Midsommar, is just how he tackles grief. It's very raw and very primal.
Mm.
Like, this isn't somebody like, you know, in most films, just somebody who's just like, as we're seeing right now, Annie in the bedroom just, you know, lying down and stuff. Mm. This is like full on, you know, them wailing into the middle of the night and just on the floor, just convulsing and, like, this is more of something like out of some kind of really dark British drama or something like that. And, like, I know Ari Aster, like, looking up, like, the trivia of this movie, he was definitely kind of, other than, you know, sort of horror films, like, he was definitely influenced by Rosemary's Baby, Don't Look Now, and The Innocents. But he was also took a lot of influence from family dramas like Ordinary People, The Ice Storm, and In the Bedroom, with how those films kind of approach family.
Mm.
And yeah, it's just how these scenes are just so effectively done, and you can't help but feel like your whole body's in knots just watching these really kind of full-on scenes of grief and anguish.
I think we need to just put Ari Aster in a room and make him feel as uncomfortable as possible.
Mm.
No, I never noticed this before. The bird has a crown on its head.
And which comes back into play later on in the movie.
Because having your head come off has something to do with it.
Indeed.
Damn it, movie.
Like, some people's like, oh, there's so many unanswered questions. But I think, in a way, that's what I love about this film. Like, when you go back and rewatch it,
like, all the clues and stuff are there. But I like,
yeah, there's so much there. But I also like the fact that the movie never full on explains everything. Because, like I said earlier, this is from the point of view of the family. So it's not like there's a scene where they randomly find out the whole history of this cult or anything like that.
Yeah, we pretty much know as much as they know. We're going through what they're going through, pretty much. And, you know, in her grief, Annie is in Charlie's little treehouse thing. Oh, my God, my back is killing me, and I'm just trying to adjust myself to get comfortable in the chair. Oh, the joys of having fibro. Actually, that's a good analogy. Having fibro is like hereditary. It makes you so fucking uncomfortable.
It just looked like this, Alex this, Wolf in this scene.
He's so good in this movie. I think in general his performance kind of gets a bit overlooked, but I think he's fantastic in this.
Oh yeah, he's absolutely brilliant. Like that shot back there where he has a close up, you could just see the red in his eyes of how tired and just in turmoil he is. And now in this scene where he's hanging out with his friend, he's now about to have a panic attack. And, like, you definitely feel for this character. And I think, and I know that Ari Aster is very kind of private about his private life. I mean, but watching this film in Midsommar, you can definitely tell, you kind of get the sense, like, how he sort of approaches, like, grief and stuff like that. It feels very personal. Like, this is somebody who's suffered, like, a really bad, like, sense of grief in their life, that it just feels real.
Yeah, and this is a very accurate representation of what he's going through.
That's what
it's like.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I get panic attacks as well. Maybe not at the extent that he has in that scene, but I know that sort of what it's like to kind of be so overwhelmed for no, like, over nothing. Like, you could just sit there and do nothing and then feel your stomach tightening up and you get anxious and your emotions get overwhelmed that, you know, it's hard to breathe in.
I mean, I'm surprised I haven't had a panic attack watching this movie again.
I think I did probably the first time I watched this movie because I was expecting or what was going on, but I loved every minute of it. And that's what true horror is at the end of the day. And I think, like, Ari Aster just knows how to kind of really tap into horror in a way that really gets under your skin.
Yeah, and it's not something that we've generally seen a lot of because what he does just was very, very unique. And as you mentioned, like, what influenced him, it does have a lot of those similarities with the films of, like, the 70s. In that it sort of, it is very much with that slow burn approach, which you get with a lot of 70s. Well, not a lot, but, you know, a fair amount of 70s horror.
Oh, yeah.
And specifically, like, Don't Look Now.
Oh yeah, definitely. And even
and Rosemary's Baby. Yeah,
I would even say even The Exorcist as well, because that was probably one of the few horror films I could think of where watching this film felt like watching The Exorcist for the first time. That sense of, like, uneasiness throughout all of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of dread throughout.
And of course we're finally introduced to Ann Dowd.
Yes, the brilliant
Ann Dowd.
Yes,
who of course plays Joan. And the funny thing is, like, you think, oh, this is a first time seeing it, but we actually saw her earlier in the grief counseling scene because she was one of the people there. And of course, we find out later on, there's like, she says, oh yeah, I knew your mother. And then you find out that she's actually a member of the cult and is now the head of the cult now that her mother and his mother's gone.
It's something we should have worked out, but we just didn't because we weren't paying all that much attention.
Well, that's the thing though. I think up to this point, the movie does such a good job at really subtly playing the cult angle. Because at this point, you think it's more of a supernatural horror film, and it is. But the cult angle really sort of doesn't really come into play until later on as the film progresses. And it's only when you go back and rewatch the film, it's like, oh, all the cult stuff was there all the time. It wasn't just thrown in at the last minute. Which I know some people who have criticized the film say, oh, it just comes out of nowhere. It's like, no, it was always there from paying attention.
Yeah, the clues were there.
Or you just haven't seen the film for a second time, so.
But the clues are there. You just have to be fucking paying attention.
Exactly.
This is not a phone you can just sit and watch while half of it's on your phone, because you've got to pay attention.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And there's a lot to analyze as well. Like, I think you and I have seen both either together or separately so many different, like, essay videos on this movie alone. Like, people's thoughts and theories and what certain aspects of this film means. Even, like, stuff about the cult itself and even payment as well. And just, like, and it's sort of fascinating watching all those and then going back to rewatch this film and just seeing the film in a whole new different
way. Yeah, it's definitely interesting. And I know, like, when I saw it, I kind of had worked some things out and remembering going back with certain things that I saw. And then, yeah, kind of not so much reaffirming, but just noticing I wasn't the only one to notice these things.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, it's like, okay, yeah, these are definitely things that are there and da-da-da-da. But it's always interesting to, you know, look into things more, what opinions are. You know, if people are reading too much into something, it's still quite fascinating, at least in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But one thing this movie is not about is Stanley Kubrick faking the moon landing.
That we know of yet.
It might just be.
It might be Ari Aster faking the Mars landing.
Yeah, he faked the helicopter thing that landed on Mars.
Exactly.
I don't know. That red in his eyes, it's a very good visual. Because it's a reflection, but it's just perfectly there. As almost to symbolize your next for payment.
Yeah, because now, I love that little... That always happens to me all the time when I wake up in the night and I look over in the classroom and I think someone's standing there. It's only because, like, oh, or something else there.
Yeah, I hate when you have to do a double take because you see something that's not really there. It looks worse than what it really is. And as we can see here, they're just putting, like, flyers and pamphlets into her letterbox.
Yeah, to kind of influence her to...
And as she's recreating the room, she's even writing down, like, the payment stuff that, well, we find out that's what it is. Because it was in the room. All these symbols are everywhere.
And that's the thing, though. Like, what happens from now is basically Payman is around this house. And kind of is going to target Peter next. But again, since he doesn't have enough power yet, because that the family isn't at its lowest point yet, he can only do certain little things, but he can't possess any of the family yet unless they're at their lowest point or... Of course, now what Andy's going to do with this seance is try to call him. And Payman and Charlie are basically... Well, I forget, like, they think they're talking to Charlie, and they are talking to Charlie, but Charlie and Payman are basically one and the same at this point.
Yeah. Which, yeah, this whole bit was just, like, on first watching, it's like, well, this is taking a really weird and interesting turn. But then you realise why. It's like, oh, fuck. It's like, just when you think things couldn't fucking get any worse, they're going to get so much fucking worse. And that is a clue.
Oh, yeah. Because it was a gift from Annie's mum to Joan.
Which you might have wanted to be more careful about in case Annie realised. Just saying.
And she just said, oh, I just looked at your welcome mat and my mum has made ones kind of similar to that. And now we'll find out later on why.
Yep.
That's the thing, though. At this point, because with Annie and her grief, she's trying to look for some kind of solace and some answers. And then going to seeing Joan and with Joan kind of knowing how to do these seances, it's with Annie trying to, you know, kind of contact Charlie because she misses her so much.
And, yeah, I guess when you're at that point in grief, you know, they say the stages of grief, which you can watch WandaVision to see what all those are. But in saying that, she still hasn't quite come to terms with it. So this is the point in her grief where she's still trying to cling to some kind of hope. And that's why she's very, I guess, easily susceptible, which is what they want.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So she pretty much just plays right into their hands. At least that's how I see it.
Yeah.
Because kind of are doing it because they know what her actions are likely going to be.
Because that later, and once she actually does the seance at home and tries to contact Charlie/Payment actually, for a moment, possesses Annie's body. So, which basically opens up a door for Payment to kind of fully possess her later on, even though she only needs her more as a tool rather than, because she needs more, because Payment needs more Peter more than anything, because he wants a male body. And Annie is, because basically they have to kill, Payment needs to kill off all the members of the family until, and leave Peter to last, and then that way he can fully possess her. And a way you could also kind of see as with the grandmother dying, like you could also say it's almost like she kind of maybe, in a way, like she died being the first one. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, like, you know, she not necessarily killed herself, but she was, in a way, kind of made herself the first one of the family to die first, so that it kind of ricochets. I mean, kind of the domino effect kind of falls from there, and then one by one, they all die.
I would assume it's something like that. It's like setting that plan in motion, which they all know what they have to do, so they're doing it.
Yeah.
But at this point in the film, you fucking have no idea where it's going with this.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, wait, what? And that's what's so great. It's just, it throws these things at you that you'd never expect. And this is one of those very shocking things that you see here, is that while she's obviously struggling to cope, she recreates what killed Charlie.
Oh, yeah.
The moment. And it's just, it just, it's a powerful scene. And powerful imagery. And it's just very, like, you know, it makes you really realize that she's someone who's not coping. And with how she's not coping, it makes her so much more susceptible to what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. And I guess in a way, one could see her as doing this is kind of confronting what happened by doing it through her art. But of course, her husband, Steve, kind of just sees this is not healthy. This is not good at all. And I like the fact that being Gabriel Byrne, kind of being the one who's trying to keep this family together, he's going through his own stuff, but of course, he can't you know, deal with his own grief, because he's kind of stuck in the middle between Peter and Annie, who are just kind of both on the far, so far gone with each of their own grief. And then he's kind of, and then their resentment towards each other, that he's kind of has to be like the peacemaker in the two of the two.
Yeah. And there's definitely that. I mean, this scene is just so, because you can sense that tension between them, and it's just, it's so uncomfortable. That's the word for this movie, uncomfortable.
Oh yeah. And this is a, just a, this scene is just a masterclass of acting from everyone. And Toni Collette is just phenomenal in this scene. Because you kind of just sort of find out that Annie, as much as she loves Peter, she hates and resents him for what happened. But in a way, like I said, like you could also sense, like, as much as she kind of is like that to Peter, in a way you could see that in a way she is angry at herself because, like we said earlier, this whole thing would never have happened if she just forced Peter to take Charlie to the party. So in a way she kind of blames herself as well and takes it out on Peter. Yeah,
big time. But we sort of find out, I can't remember exactly what it was, but she would stare at him while he was sleeping. She wanted to kill him or something. And I think that goes back to that, I don't know, in a weird sense, she kind of knew that Peter would be the vessel for something horrible, which is payment.
Yeah.
And that kind of, I think, ties into that, as fucked up as all of that is.
Yeah, because, like,
I think that's kind of a hint, in a weird way, that, you know, if she had done it, they wouldn't have had a vessel at all.
Yeah, exactly. Because basically,
look forward to, I guess.
Yeah, because like Addie was already at the odd ends with her mother, and of course, when Peter was born, like she did not want her around Peter because of, you know, what happened in her family previously. And basically, like, and she even admits, like, when Charlie was born, she basically just palmed her off to her mother's just so she could be satisfied in some way. And that was kind of a mistake on her part, because basically Charlie became very attached to the grandmother, and basically the grandmother kind of used her as to put payment inside as a temporary vessel until, you know, they could able to use Peter.
So are we going to get Hereditary 2, Payment on the Loose?
Yes. That'd be amazing.
I don't know what kind of movie that would be, but could you imagine?
It's okay.
Just, you know.
After all that, Peter is about to draw his, which of course is like, what about you, Mom? You told me to take her to the party. And then, like,
it's just, you know,
it's like one of those things, like, we've all experienced, like, being in a family and then something goes and something really intense happens. It's like that, but you just can't get out, you can't escape.
It's just like, I don't want to watch this. It makes me feel so uneasy.
Yeah, and I can see some people kind of feel like, I feel like the drama stuff was better than stuff, but for me, I think they're both equally effective. And if anything, what is happening here is a different type of horror, which is the horrors of grief and all that.
Whoever, like, actually made these miniatures, like, wow.
Oh, yeah, the miniatures are amazing. And it's very so detailed,
like insanely detailed.
Okay, here comes a little fun fact that most people don't realize. Two couple walking past Annie now, when she came out of the shop. Some people say that's actually Danny and Christian from Midsommar.
I could see that because it does kind of look like them from behind.
Yeah, yeah. And since, and some people think like it could possibly be because Ari Aster pretty much made Midsommar literally not this film finished, because Midsommar literally came out less than a year after Hereditary did. And Ari, and some people think like maybe it, these two movies are kind of set in the same kind of universe.
I can see that. It's the Ari Aster
verse.
Yeah. And what are the chances Joni was stalking Annie to see her at the shops?
Now, Joan, I know what you're going out to stalk Annie to. I'm going just outside to
stalk to Annie.
Annie, are you okay? You okay? You okay, Annie?
I don't think so.
Clearly not.
So this is where she really starts to sucker in.
Yeah.
She's a bit of a C-U-N-T, that Joan.
but she's very good at her job as a to influence.
She's a bad, bad woman, that Joan.
I shouldn't make fun of anyone named Joan, because I have an auntie who I love who's named Joan.
Well, we're not talking about that Joan. We're talking about this Joan.
Exactly. This Joan is pure evil.
Yeah, this Joan is, you know, a very, what's the right word? She's very obsessed with this whole payment thing. Like, just, I don't want to hear about payment. Payman freaks me out thanks to this frickin' movie. I don't like it. I don't want to hear about it. It's like even worse than The Exorcist, because I was like, you know, Pazuzu just doesn't sound great. You know, it freaks you out when you hear about it, but nah, not so much now. It's fucking Payman freaks me out now.
Sort of looking up trivia on this movie from IMDb.
Is that why you're so quiet?
Yes, because I'm trying to find the best stuff for this movie. Well, Toni Collette has said that Ari Aster was probably the most prepared director she's worked with. She praised him for practically having the full movie already shot and edited in his head 2 years prior to the start of filming.
I can definitely see that when you see the finished product.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I know this for a fact. As you know, having made short films in the past and everything like that, and some which you kind of stew with for quite a while, like sometimes I'll literally like have the whole film in my head, like shot for shot. Like, for example, like the short film I made a while back, Solace, like that was pretty much like exactly how I envisioned it in my head. I was able to kind of just put it all together very quickly. Like, because, you know, I had thought about it and stewed on it for so long that, like, it was pretty easy to kind of make that film so quickly.
And this is some weird seance thing, whatever. Just
because you can never have enough seances in horror movies.
And it works, apparently.
Yes. Also, I want to give a bit of a shout out to the score of this movie, which is done by Colin Stetson. The score of this movie is phenomenal and so unnerving.
It is. It just, everything about this film is just, that's Hereditary. I mean, Midsommar, to an extent, is the same, but in a different way.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, it's apparently Ari Aster was very influenced to feed his wife and her lover as well when he made this movie.
Yeah, that's one messed up movie. Hey, look, it's a chalkboard. Which she was buying these supplies at the store, because I noticed them in the trunk of her car.
I was like reading up, and apparently how they were able to get the chalk to move is that they actually put a magnet in the chalk.
Yeah, I imagine they would have had a magnet and someone underneath it.
Yeah, because I think Ari Aster, from what I read in the trivia, is that he wanted to try to make all the visual effects in camera as possible.
And I think it's all the better for it, because it's very impactful when you do see anything. And her reaction, I think, is very spot on too. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. I'm just sort of thinking, like, can you imagine, like, how, as brilliant as a performance Toni Collette gives in this film, you can imagine how emotionally draining it would be.
Oh, yeah.
Doing a performance like this every day as an actor. Damn it, Marcy, stop it! It's creeping me out. I don't like it.
I can't help it.
I'm scared.
I like freaking you out.
You are. Stop it. Now, the question is, Marcy, is that sound, which is scarier, that sound or the from Jew on the Grudge?
Actually, you know what sound always just... We're just like...
What sound is that?
I don't talk about it now.
Because everyone will probably use it. Our listeners...
Exactly! If I say what it is...
I'll just use the Ju-on croaking sound, like the... I tried to do it and I completely stopped. Like, it's like a...
Can you...
hiccups.
I was going to say it might be a sound to do with maybe a predator.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, stop it. No.
Oh, that, you just heard just then in the back of the car. That made the entire audience fucking jump. Stop it. You're scaring me.
Well, maybe there's some payment in me that we don't know about because my family must be involved in a cult. I don't know.
That would explain everything.
Shut up. All right, shit's about to get fucking weird in this movie.
I gotta say, though, like, Toni Collette has a very good knack picking horror movie scripts. Because she starred in The Sixth Sense, which
and
of course
how good was she in that?
Indeed,
so good.
And then of course, and then she did the Fright Night remake, which was a lot of fun.
I quite enjoyed that remake. I thought it was fun.
And
this is my worst fucking nightmare because there's ants that just like to show up all the time, and I do not want them on my bed.
I know how you feel about ants.
Ugh! No.
I wonder if these are real ants or they're
CGI. I don't know. I don't like it. Go away.
Stop it. I'm scared.
I didn't mean to. I'm getting grossed out by the fucking massive ants.
That's the thing that terrifies you the most. It's not the cult. It's not Charlie Severhead. It's not payment, it's the ants.
It's the ants. I'm like, nah, go away. Fucking ants. I hate ants. Go away.
Yeah, all right. I'm convinced they're CGI ants.
Because
it'd be hard to get actual real ants to kind of do all that type of stuff.
Well, not really. You just put food there and they'll do whatever.
Well, that is true.
Just make everything a little bit sticky. Because ants are just gross.
And of course... She sees Peter just covered in ants.
I don't like it. Go away. I really like it.
I think another thing. Mom, what are you doing? Because she's just sleepwalking. I also got to say this, and I've talked to people who I know who don't, film critic friends of mine who don't like Ari Aster.
Well,
and they always
slap.
Exactly, slap them in the face.
No, they can dislike or like whoever they want.
Exactly, but, you know, they're wrong. But but I, one of the things I hear...
Wait, like, you cut off for a second.
Sorry. What I was saying, one of the constant criticisms of this is stop it. His scenes come across as unintentionally funny. They're just being like, and stuff like that. But the thing is, though, between this movie
and let's cut your audio out for some reason.
Sorry. Like, between this film, Midsommar, and also, you know, the short film, The Strange Thing About the Johnsons, is that some people think, like, oh, sometimes he has moments that are unintentionally hilarious. I am absolutely 100% convinced that a lot of the moments that people find unintentionally funny in his films are actually deliberate. Like, there is a lot of dark humor in his films. And the scene we saw just then where she's like basically says something horrible about Peter and like covers her mouth like, oh shit, I just said that out loud. That is legit funny. It's not being unintentionally funny. It's legit funny. And also when you read interviews and also watch Ari Aster in interviews, he's just like a very laid back, chill and funny person.
I don't quite think like I find like performances or anything laughably funny because they're bad or, you know, whatever. Like that scene, like while you say, yeah, that is like, oh, geez. But that whole scene is just very horrific, though.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how you could laugh at a mum having a dream where she's going to burn her son. Like, okay.
Ha-ha. Exactly. I don't know. Some people are just weird.
Just like this movie.
Exactly.
Like whatever the fuck's going on here.
It's like this weird treehouse that has multiple houses.
I don't know. And shit's about to fucking get even more fucked, basically.
Yeah, because now Annie's deciding, let's do a seance and contact Charlie.
Because Annie was not okay. She was not okay, Annie.
Annie is definitely not okay. I'm now convinced that's why Ari Aster named her Annie, just so we can... Annie, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay, Annie?
Quite possibly, but I'm not sure. This movie just... stop it, movie, stop it.
And this is all a soundstage, too. Like, this whole house.
But I know what's coming, and I'm just like, don't like it.
But that's the thing, though. I think Ari Aster is one of the only few modern horror directors who really know how to create horror. Like, how to stage and craft the scene. Like, I would put him in, like, him with, like, Jordan Peele, Robert Eggers, and also Mike Flanagan. Like, they're guys who know how to kind of craft a very and well-executed scary moment.
This whole bit is just like...
Because at this point, like, they think she's going legit cray-cray.
Yeah, they just think she's gone insanely crazy. She's off the deep end now. I mean, she is a little bit, but she doesn't know why exactly.
Yeah, because she's, of course, being influenced by, you know, taken advantage by outside influences to kind of...
Damn Joni!
Using a seance to open that doorway for payment.
All she needed to do was just convince her that this was real and she'll be able to talk to Charlie. But No. Oh, Annie, you shouldn't have done it.
Exactly.
I don't like it. I'm waiting for the horribleness.
And this is another thing I love about Toni Collette's performance is the things she does with her face. Like, it almost feels like she's contorting her whole face when she's, like, either terrified or in anguish. Like, she can do to her face I've never seen done by another actor.
Mm. Danny, you shouldn't be doing this, damn it. It's only going to end badly.
Of course, this is white people doing all this shit. We shouldn't be doing this. Let's do this.
They're like, what the? This is not a good idea, Annie. Not a good idea.
None of this is okay, Annie.
I'm just sitting here like, don't do this. If she does it differently, maybe the movie will end differently. Oh my god, just don't stop.
Anybody better stop it, because or else like she'll...
Now shit's gone down. Because it ain't Charlie, really. Yeah.
I like the reaction. It's like, oh shit, the fire, that candle just... Boom.
And it's back on.
There we go. Like, just then you can just see, like, Charlie / Payment is, I think, is going into Annie's body. Because
right there now.
Movement. Yeah.
With that.
Movement.
Yeah, when the candle blew up and she gasped, it goes in her. Then it comes back on to signify it's there in her. I believe, anyway.
Yeah, because that's what the seance is basically for, is to kind of, like, open up that doorway for Payman / Charlie to enter Annie's body.
I don't like it. This is just not okay, movie.
But I find it interesting is, like, even in that time when she acts as Charlie, and it's obviously that is Millie Shapiro's voice coming out of her, she sounds so different from when we see her early in the film. Like, weird and no confidence. So a part of me reckons, like, that is the true Millie. I mean, sorry, the true Charlie. And, like, basically the reason why she's as weird and awkward as she is because, like, I guess she's sharing her body with a demon. So, and I think that's just kind of an interesting little touch.
For sure.
Liftoch Pandemonium?
I think so.
We see all these, like, you know, symbols and words are written around the house. And I honestly, but obviously the grandmother put all those as almost like a curse or something on the house.
There's something. Yeah, she did something. This is a bit fucked up. Because look, there's that light again.
Yeah, because now...
It's Payman, the Payman.
Yeah, because Payman is slowly, not quite, taking over...
He's trying to get there.
Yeah, he's trying to get there. Like, he can probably get in who his body... Can't fool.
You cut out again.
So I was saying, like, he can't. He can get into his like influence his body a little bit, but he can't fully control Peter's body yet. Hence, like, he's showing himself as a creepy reflection of Peter in that glass
case. Don't like it. Stop it. I don't like it.
Now I just want to rewatch, like, all these, like, essay videos on this movie now. Because that's the thing that there's a lot of things that there are things that are left unanswered, like certain questions. And some people might think, like, oh, they're plot holes or logic gaps. I just think the movie deliberately doesn't want to explain everything that's going on.
Yeah, I think there's purposely things left open. With it.
And it's your interpretation of what happened.
Pretty much. Yes.
I mean, at the end of the day, people, just because, and I've had this issue with a lot of people who nitpick, just because a movie doesn't say outright what is happening doesn't mean it's a plot hole.
Pretty much. I think instead of just like nitpicking and I don't know, just if something's not absolutely perfect and to your standards, you hate it. Like, just chill and enjoy movies. Enjoy cinema for what they are. They're there to make you feel things, entertain you, have a reaction. Whether you're watching the shittiest of the shit or the best of the best. Like, okay, it's fair enough if you don't like something, but if you're going into, like, you know, a 30-page essay of why this one scene is crap, like, get life, mate.
Exactly.
That's just my two cents. And, yeah, I'll get some hate, I'm sure.
Don't worry, at the time I wrote that tweet a couple weeks back about nitpicking, I had quite the reaction from people, with some agreement and some weren't happy at what I had to say, so that's a whole different story.
Yes. But, I don't care if I don't agree with people. That doesn't bother me. It's better to have a wide variety of opinions and share those opinions and be respectful about those opinions.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm not going to say, like, if I didn't like something, oh, don't go watch it because it's crap. I'll be like, no, you go watch it because you might feel differently. Just because didn't necessarily like something, you're going to, you know, not like it either. Or if I love something, it doesn't mean you're going to love it. Like, yeah, exactly. It is what it is. And it shits me when someone goes, oh, wow, that movie wasn't very good. And someone will reply, oh, I was looking forward to it. And it's like, well, just because someone said they didn't like it doesn't mean you can't go still watch it, you knob.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, that's my little rant. Meanwhile, Annie, who's not okay, has destroyed all the miniatures. Because she is not okay, Annie.
And Steve is like, are you okay, Annie? Are you okay, Annie? Okay, I'm just going to stop making that joke.
Yeah, that's like the stupidest joke we could have made. And we went there.
I'll go back to making jokes about heads.
No.
Ah, Gabriel Byrne.
You were not, in fact, Kaiser Soze.
Indeed. And I like how to end the scene. Let's just put the most... Stephen looking over at one of the sort of the miniature diagrams and sees a headless corpse on a bed.
I don't know if that was meant to be Charlie or who, or Annie, or him, or Peter. I don't know.
Exactly.
This family likes their pills.
But I also like that the film really does show what, in a little bit more of a subtle way, like what Stephen is going through as well.
Because you can tell that he's not coping with everything that's happened because, like you said, he's being strong and putting up a front and keeping the peace for Annie and Peter while not at all dealing with things properly for himself.
Yeah, exactly.
And, and you can see, like, as well, because Peter and Annie are going through, you know, they're all going through something horrible, but they haven't at all stopped to check and see how anyone else is.
Yeah, and I like how, at least with between the three of them, is how each of them deal with grief differently. Because at the end of the day, like, people deal with grief differently.
And look, like, there's that shining light again. It's Payman. Anyway, yeah, it shows you a very different... you know, from the different points of view with what's happened, the grief of all these characters.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like this.
It's all scary.
No, I just know what's happening and it's just very...
We'll blame all of our fans for...
How dare you people vote for this? But, Bede!
Yes?
I'm going to cut you off. Because it was your genius choice to put this movie on the list. Why did you put this movie on the list, and why is it controversial?
Well, mainly because of how it was... I didn't expect it to get as high as a vote as it did. Oh, that's creepy. There's Charlie in the corner of the room.
But I don't like it. Go away.
What's the thing, though? Like, of course, like being... I guess compared to all the other movies we had on the list, it's probably the least controversial. But it still had, it still developed a lot of controversy in some ways, especially.
Yeah, head fell off again.
And it turned into a ball. But it had its own kind of in terms of the shocking elements of the film. And also the taboo subject of killing off a child in a horror film.
Ugh. This is just horrible to watch. That poor dog. Doggy. If that dog was hurt, there's hell to pay.
And I like the fact that you don't know exactly what's going on. Was he dreaming, or was Annie actually in there trying to pull his head, under the influence of being taken over a little bit by Payman? So you're just never really sure.
It's so unsettling.
Yeah, because in both their ways, they're both kind of will get taken over for a little bit, but not fully yet, because they're not at that point where, Payman could either take over one or the other. But with Peter's case, Peter has to die before he can fully take over Peter's body. It's all part of this cult thing.
Yeah, this is the weirdest cult ever. It's all just very weird and wacky, and I don't know what they want to do. They're just crazy, silly cult. All right, things are going to get really fucking insane now. I just hope I can deal with it as best I can.
Yes. We need to bring more levity to this very serious
Marzi. Yeah, now she's just going to go to wherever it wants to go. It's not going to make any apologies for this right now.
I'll say this. Hereditary is like to Muriel's wedding ever.
Yeah, sure, Pete. She's on fire.
This girl is on fire.
Literally.
It's like, oh, I better take that book out before I get burst in the flames.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna I've done acting here and there, but if I had to do a scene that had being lit on fire, I would legit piss myself.
I like how she realizes, she's like, okay, the book caught fire, so I'm catching fire, not dunk your fucking sleeve in water.
Now, here's an interesting thing. You know that shot back there where it's, dark for a split second and then goes to daylight? Apparently, if you slow that shot down, you can actually see the cult members surrounding the house.
Oh.
I saw that in a video.
Oh. Yeah, they do appear, all over the shop, and it's fuck off.
It's basically when everyone kept thinking so was in one. It's that person's Mephisto, that person's Mephisto. In this movie, it's that person's Mephisto.
Yeah, it's that person's in the cult, that person's in the cult, that person's in the cult.
And now here comes the part of the movie where Annie goes to see Joan to get help, but then we find out, of course, Joan is part of the cult, or the new leader of the cult.
Well, we probably worked that out because we're smart.
Exactly.
Because our seance didn't really go to plan, did it?
Because you see the symbol.
There's the symbol. Yeah. There's the symbol
of Payman there.
Yeah, there's the weird shit Charlie made or Payman made. And a picture of Peter in the middle of the triangle thing.
Yep.
Hello, Joni.
Oh my gosh, my mum never made me a mat.
Meanwhile, Peter is dealing with being a teenager. Exactly. That's not the right movie.
I would say he's dealing with grief and trauma, but he's just being a normal teenager right now.
Yeah, he's just literally being emo Peter Parker.
Exactly.
Well, without the dancing, but still. Oh! Cult person.
Yes.
It's cult Joni. in. I don't know if, like, everyone's just ignoring her or what. But this is fucking weird and creepy and I don't like it. I don't like it.
Because she's, like, listen. Listening to kind of, like, her words is, like, obviously putting kind of some kind of curse or spell on.
Oh, look, it's all the mats.
And also, like, basically, I think she says, like, Peter, get out. So basically, she wants Peter to leave.
She wants Peter out of the body, yeah.
Mm.
So she left all this stuff behind, but does she know, like, Annie would know what this is, or?
I don't think she did, because, you know, as stated earlier in the film, like, Annie did not have a close relationship with her mom.
Mm.
Even though, yeah, she ended up living with them in the end, but even then they were always at odds with each other.
And here we get all the clues we need as to what's going on. But yeah, it's weird. Like, did the mum ever expect she would look at this, work it out, and try to get out of it, or no? Or I don't know. It's interesting things that you can think about in this movie.
Yeah, and I think, like, at some point, I'm probably misremembering this, but I think, like, Annie, I think, had tensions just to throw all this stuff out. And
maybe that's what the mum thought.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it's definitely something interesting to think about, and I guess she's lucky she didn't look at it sooner, because there's Jodie.
Mm-hmm. And I do remember there was a letter that her mum actually left for Annie to read.
Mm.
And I forgot what the letter said, but I think it was almost like, in a way, kind of preparing her for this, what's going to happen.
Yeah, oh, for sure, it was 100%. Hmm. Weird.
They're going to sacrifice. They're ready to sacrifice the family now.
But that was the interesting framing of that family photo, because Peter was so, like, you know, not close with the others. He was, like, sort of away. Which I think is an interesting little thing.
Oh, yeah. And I think it's obvious, like, that ring that you keep seeing for Ring of Light. I think that is payment
as well.
Its present known.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Oh yeah, that's right. I almost forgot. Like, some people came along and took Annie's mother's body out of her grave.
I wonder who that could have been.
Obviously, it was, like, the cult from Midsommar.
Yes, it was. They're actually the same cult, we just don't know it yet.
Exactly. Like, that's why I wouldn't be surprised if both these movies were set in the same.
I look forward to his next cult movie.
Well, I think he's just about, in a few months, about the film. I believe it's going to be called Disappointment Boulevard, and Joaquin Phoenix is going to star in it. I don't know if it's going to be a horror movie or not, but I think it's sort of like a, I can't remember the plot of it, but it definitely, but anything at this point, anything up to two movies, anything Ari Aster makes, I will watch it.
Yeah. And I will expect the unexpected and then still be shocked and surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Punishment brings wisdom. I find everything on the blackboard is very interesting.
It definitely kind of, like, everything is deliberate in this film. Like, anything that's on a chalkboard, everything is deliberately put there.
Mm.
And, of course, like,
there's the mom's body.
And obviously that's why all the supernatural stuff is happening. Body's been attacked the entire time.
Very fucked up. And gross. And there's the symbol.
Although I now just sort of realize, like, looking at the, like, three people when you look at it.
Yep. And there's that fucking sound.
Yep.
Fuck that creepy sound. What?
And here it comes. This scene makes me cry.
This scene is fucked. Another fucked scene.
This is basically is body horror, what's happening right now.
Yeah, it's just fucked. Look at his face, just contorting.
Ugh. It kind of looks like he's like got an allergy. You know, like how sometimes face puffs up in a way. It could almost be like Charlie ate Payman kind of taking over his body in a way.
Yeah. It feels like that's just kind of what it is.
Yeah. Oh,
that is just brutal. Ugh. And seriously, people just ignore, or not ignore, but just don't give him credit for his performance. Like, go away if you think he's shit.
No, he's incredible in this film.
Yeah.
And I like how this shot here, again, it's like a sort of a dolly shot, but how it's sort of, even though this is the actual set of the house, it does have this kind of miniature feel to it.
Yeah, it's so good how they actually do that.
Because
it does make you feel very uneasy, because you don't know if what you're seeing is, like, the miniatures or not. And it's very clever that it does that.
Yeah, and I do like what you said earlier about basically, like, the miniature. Pretty much this family are basically the miniatures of this kind of outside force that's controlling their entire moves. Mm. Like, they have no say or free will on what's happening to them in the entire story.
And they pretty much play into everything.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, it's about to fucking get fucked up now. I mean, I keep saying that, and it doesn't happen. I'm like, oh, fucking hell, it's going to happen.
Well, in a way, this movie is pretty fucked up. Yeah. Like,
but it's going to get fucking insane very soon.
Yeah, this is where the movie just goes legit insane.
But to be fair, I've seen this the once, and I keep thinking, oh, this is going to happen now. But it's like, no, this was a bit after.
And that's what I love about this film. There's a nice, great build-up before it actually legit goes insane.
Mm. It really just throws you into it and makes no apologies for it.
Mm.
It just doesn't care. And it's just like, ugh, I'm dreading.
And I guess, like, you know, being that this is an examination of grief and stuff like that, but you can also see this kind of mental illness as well, because, like, with what happened to her mum and also her brother and that, you think, oh, they had obvious mental illness. It's not going to affect me. But now it's, like, with everything that's going on, it feels like she's kind of going down that path herself. Like, hence Hereditary of the title. But sometimes in, you know, in some families and stuff, like illness with, or even mental illness can pass on to members of the family. So you can even say this is kind of the most extreme version of that.
Just a little extreme. You know, I'm really glad I don't have an attic, and I've never had an attic, because I would never want to go up there.
That's the thing, though. Like, in Australia, do we even have attics or basements in Australia? I don't think anyone does.
I've never seen one. Like, the closest we have to an attic is just the little sort of manhole thing. So it's a crawl space for the roof, so you can fix, like, or install, you know, air conditioning and all that stuff. Yeah, I just can't think of everything it's called. But yeah, and there's no basement.
Yeah.
Yeah, why didn't you?
Well, this could have been sorted if everyone just called the police.
Yeah, if the police were called, you know. Just like the fanatic.
Although, as we have stated, like, American... My controversial opinions.
You cut out, apparently, because I didn't hear what you said.
Well, to be fair, Marcy, this is America. And
you cut out again.
Ah, jeez. All right. I'm just saying, to be fair, this movie is set in the cops are pretty useless.
It keep every time you're trying to say it, it cuts you out. It's whatever is Discord is just censoring you.
I do not like the fact that Discord is censoring me right now.
See, that didn't cut you out at all.
All right. I'll say what I have to say again. Marcy, this is America. Cops are useless.
It did not censor you.
I don't know why that happens, because I've noticed it quite a lot every time we cast over Discord.
Yeah, when we end up doing the podcast, it just goes stupid with cutting you out.
Exactly.
Damn it, Discord.
From now on, we're going back to either Zoom or Skype.
Well, if Zoom, you know, didn't cut out after 40 minutes, be good.
Yeah, that is very true. Actually, you know, if you do it one-on-one, that's fine. But if you have other people, yeah, it's...
Doesn't it cut off if you share a screen?
I'm not sure. I don't think so. Not that I recall.
We might have to investigate that.
Yeah, we'll have to investigate this for...
If anyone knows and can tell us, please let us know, because we clearly just don't give a shit about looking up the facts about Zoom.
We're too busy watching and doing audio commentary at the moment, so we don't have time to do all this.
And look, there's she's got the lighter fluid ready.
Ooh, I just sort of noticed there's a light inside that little miniature house there.
There's a lot of lights going on for daytime.
I know. But this is like Troll 2. It's actually night outside, even though it's daylight.
All right. This is a moment that I definitely didn't think was going to happen or see coming, and it's fucked. It's so fucked.
You know what's funny, though? I think I saw, like...
It's fucked. That's all I'm going
to
say.
What we're about to see with Steven being lit on fire... Like, I think I might have saw a still of this scene before I saw the movie, but seeing that it's an out-of-context kind of still, like, I had no idea, like, what's going on. I didn't realize it was the husband.
Ugh, it's a fucking movie. How much longer do we have left?
And that's the thing now. Now, Addie is almost at her lowest point. And once
it's the perfect time for all this shit to fucking happen.
Yeah, and for Payman to temporarily take over her body.
Fucking Payman. Can't do anything just simply, can you, Payman?
Exactly. He has to make this very complex plan.
Yeah, now Payman's gonna fucking haunt me later on tonight. And look, I do think this is a fantastic movie. I'm just sitting here like, because I know what's happening, it's taking its time, it's making me more uncomfortable. I'm just waiting for it to finish so I can go and cry.
Yeah, I mean, I love this movie so much. I mean, my number one that year, and this is my third time watching it, but I guess it's not the type of film that... This man is on fire. Ow.
Excuse me. But, the dog is scratching at me and pulled my headphones off.
Oh, she's now been taken over.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, see, there they are. See the cult people?
Yeah, I can see them. They're all naked.
Yeah, actually, I was wrong. That was the shot I was referring to.
They're all naked.
Yes. Because for some reason, cult people need to be naked for some reason. Because they were also naked in Midsommar.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this movie doesn't have much longer to go, because the dog is getting very pissed off because he wants to have dinner.
No.
And I can't just abandon you while we record this podcast.
We're almost there, sir, because this is the part where shit's shots in the film.
Yeah.
Annie, you can slightly see Annie in the corner.
Yep.
Like the legit up the corner of the wall.
Yep.
I remember seeing this shot in the cinema with that packed crowd, and you could hear everyone going, aah!
Yep. It's very uncomfortable, and I don't like it.
That's the thing, though. Like, it's an interesting shot, because...
Why does this... Discord keeps cutting you out, and it's really annoying.
All right, It's one of those shots where you're not sure, like, if you didn't notice it or see hear people react to it, you probably would never
You wouldn't even notice, but it's so subtle. It works really well.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Mm.
And I like how it's just, she's so... And, of course, that's when you know she was there the entire time as her crawling.
Because somehow having a bit of payment possession makes you have all these abilities now.
Exactly.
You can climb up the walls like Spider-Man.
She has spider powers.
It's been a few too many Spider-Man references from me in this movie.
It should be like, this movie is actually the MCU.
Yeah,
Tony Collette is the Spider-Woman.
And he's just Payman.
Yes.
Payman's like the next Thanos.
Exactly.
There you go.
He was hiding in plain sight the entire time.
Mm. Ugh. He's so, like, just fucked up with everything. He didn't even change his bloody shirt from breaking his nose.
That would have to be hard if you went to bed knowing you got a broken nose.
Mm-hmm. I've never had a broken nose, and I don't want one.
Yeah, me neither. And this is one of those things, like, I know, because I tend to roll around in my sleep. I always... So if I had a broken nose, I would, like, wake up crying because I know I'd land on it if I laid on
my... You probably would re-break it and just wake up covered in blood.
Exactly.
Ugh. I don't like this. This part is just building up and I'm just sitting here like, I don't like it!
But this is what I love about Ari Aster. Mm. Is like, he's very old school with his approach because he's using a lot of long takes and Steadicam.
Mm. It's very easy to see why we both have become quite the fans of Ari Aster, because you look back on a lot of films that we really love and I'd say enjoy, but some you can't really enjoy, but ones that we sort of rate quite highly are very similar in that aspect that they are slow burn, they have the long shots, the wider shots, the little hints and clues everywhere, being very subtle with things. So it's just very much like appeals to what we like. And it is one of the things that we do actually have in common with our tastes.
Exactly.
Whereas you want to watch something called Evil Bong, and I would rather, you know, go through what Peter's going through in this movie than watch Evil Bong.
Now I want to see Ari Aster's Evil Bong.
I think you better pitch it to him. If he made Evil Bong, I'd watch it.
I'm just going to pitch it right now.
Mm,
I'm going to find Ari Aster on Twitter or somewhere and just pitch him this idea.
Ugh, this movie is just making me so uneasy. Because, again, it's been a few years when it came out and I haven't seen it since. Because I haven't been prepared to, and I've been dreading watching it again because it won the poll for our bonus episode, and now I'm sitting here and I'm like, this is why I've put off watching it again.
Anyone for some barbecue?
Yes, please. Better see if Armie Hammer wants some.
Armie, what happened with the dad?
He'd be like, very crispy.
Probably well done.
It looks very well done. I have a feeling he likes it more raw. And look who's in the background again. Mother dearest.
No more wire hangers ever!
Oh, Jesus. That's the last thing we need in this movie.
If I saw, like, my mum up in the corner of a roof like that, I would shit my...
Yeah, I'd be fucking out of there.
And like, it's not the only thing to worry about because now there's a naked dude in the doorway, and that's the dude who smiled at Charlie at the funeral. Because I know. Because
imagine turning around and seeing that in your house.
Oh, I'd be fucking.
Fucking out of there so fast. Like, seriously, where did she come from?
She was in that corner of the room. But yeah, that was effective to me too, because like it handles that darkness and she just comes out of
it. And this is what's so great, like, when you look at Midsommar and Hereditary in contrast, where this one is so... we have scenes in day, but it's still quite dark and moody. Whereas Midsommar, most of it is during the day and it's so bright. Everything is very much sunshine and you can see everything. This it brings it down to that moody, almost washed out. But then when the colours are needed to still keep it that gloomy, it does. And I think that's just such a fascinating contrast between the two films, at least on that visual level. Whereas they actually have a lot of those visual clues.
Oh, definitely. Oh, and that's the thing, though. Some people I know who say, it goes insane in the last half. And it's like, if you actually watch a lot of 70s horror films, they were all like that. They had the very slow build-up, and then they just went legit insane. And, of course, there's another fucking cult member right fucking there.
Naked? And why?
There's two of them, because I can just make out one person's face.
I can just see one person. It's freaking me out enough.
Yeah, there was another one there, but you can only just see her face. The candle.
Ugh. Imagine seeing that. Ugh. You'd be like, what the fuck is going on? Why am I still in my house? Why are there bugs everywhere? Why are there naked cult people there? Nothing of this is okay. It is just... I don't like it. I don't want to look back there. No.
It's not there. It's right in front
of me. I know, but I don't want to look.
Which, of course, is a scene where a floating Annie has two wires and is decapitating herself with them.
Well, you said no more wire hangers. She took it a bit too literally.
Indeed. I don't know how she got in there.
This is just fucked, this thing.
So if there is a plot hole, it's this. How is it?
I don't like it.
This face, her face there is terrifying.
I don't like it. Stop it. Make it stop. Ew. More nudie people.
Oh my gosh, new people, getting out of here.
I could jump out the window.
I could handle my mum soaring off her own head, but I can't deal with naked old people.
Nah, it's just like out the fucking window I go.
Exactly. To be fair, I'd probably be the same too.
Yeah. You know, your mum's just like too many wire hangers. She's cutting her own head off with, you know, the piano wire or whatever the fuck it's meant to be. Oh, there's payment. And then you see nude people is like, nah, fuck, I'm out.
But you see there, like, that there was a black shadow. So I think that was...
Payman's in him now.
His soul leaving the body, and now Payman's taking
over. Well, you
over.
Saw the light. That was Payman. So he's in him now.
Yeah, but before that, there was, like, a shadow that just went over Peter.
Maybe. I didn't really see it. So maybe, yeah. But we know that's it now. Oh, the head's floating. I mean, the body's floating. I don't know how or why, but it is.
It's got to go up there for the part of the, I guess, the shrine. Because from what I remember, it's just like anything to do with payment. Like, besides Peter, they need three, like, headless bodies up there, which coincidentally are the three female generations of this family. You've got the grandmother, the mother... Annie and of course
and I think
Charlie.
That's represented in that symbol where it looks like the three people and the dog's dead.
No!
Fuck you, movie.
This is Ari Aster, that's going way too far.
I don't care about anything else. You don't kill the animals in a movie. Why are they nude and just standing there?
Yes.
Why? What purpose does it serve in this cult?
I don't know why between this and Midsommar and other. I don't know why all cults need to be nude. It was even in Rosemary's Baby. Maybe they just want to be nude. Maybe they just want to let it all hang out.
I don't know, but it's weird. I guess that's how nature intended us to be naked.
Indeed.
Oh no, I'm just trying to work out logic where there is none. Maybe, I don't know.
That is a weird treehouse.
Mm.
It literally is like a house on four wooden stumps.
So here we are in the weird treehouse thing. And Peter is now Payman.
Although I gotta say, though, it's funny that Anne Dowd... What? Naked? But I suppose being that she's the leader of, now the new leader of this cult, she doesn't need to be. But still,
I'm glad they've kind of positioned the people so their head is not bowing down in front of someone else's bum.
Yeah.
Because imagine if, like, you're on set and someone farts.
That is true.
Like, that wouldn't be fun. For
Nat Wolf, I'll be like, I'm in a scene where there's, like, naked people. Of course, there's Charlie's head with a crown on top of it, which is supposed to symbolize Payman.
With the symbols that we've seen, and there's the headless bodies.
Yep, that's Annie's, and that, I believe, is the grandmother.
And the nude people again, and I can see penis and stuff.
They're not very shy, these are... cultists. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe because she's the leader, she wears clothes. I don't know.
They're all probably looking down so they don't have to see everyone's asses and dicks and boobs and the JJs.
Maybe everyone's just not a prude like you be.
I am not a prude.
Yeah, you are a little bit.
Ah, so now Payman's realized, ooh, I'm now in this body now.
Oh, well, good job, Queen Lee.
And something. Also you can see, like, having Charlie's previous kind of vessel of Payman, and now
this is, like, the crown. Official, you know, yeah, one vessel.
Given the crown to the new vessel.
Mm.
And the score is just...
insane.
Magnetic, right? Mm. Insane, yeah.
Mm. So now that Payman has possession of Peter, what does he do?
I don't know. Take over the world, I suppose.
I'm guessing that was Charlie, and it's moving. And I don't like it. Its fingers were moving. I don't like it.
Well, that's the thing, though. I always kept thinking, like, because they say Charlie, not Payman.
Mm.
So I'm assuming that for it, Payman and Charlie are one and the same.
Mm. I don't think there was much of an actual, like, person with Charlie. I think a lot of it was very much having Payman in there.
Like, instead of, it's sort of like that, the girl we've been seeing was actually Payman the entire time.
Mm.
And maybe a little bit was probably Charlie, but it was mostly Payman.
Mm, like, I feel like she didn't really get to become an actual person because there was that influence there.
Mm.
That's how I kind of interpret it anyway.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot to interpret from this movie.
Oh, they're all happy because they've got Payman. I just want to know, like, after you resurrect Payman... oh, look, we can see what that dude had for lunch. Like, what happens next? Because I saw something about the people that do it, like, will get riches from payments. I don't know.
I believe so, yeah. Because I think in that book, it had, like, someone on top of a vast of treasure.
Mm.
And there's no credits. It's just goes...
Well, on this copy from Binge, apparently, that's all we get.
Interesting.
And there we go.
Okay, so it's just going to the next.
Yep. Pretty much just goes straight to the next one.
Interesting. So there's no credits. We're just going.
Yep.
But yes,
apparently so.
Our audio comment, our fan voted, or our second band voted audio commentary for the topic of controversial films on Hereditary.
Indeedio. Indeedio. Yes, so thank you for those who vote in our monthly polls, and hope you enjoy the bonus episode. Apologies if there was a few technical difficulties, just because having to record on Discord cuts beat out for some reason, and my dog has been, you know, trying to get my attention for the last hour.
He's your Paven.
Yeah, pretty much. but anyway, so yeah, thank you for listening. Hope you somewhat enjoyed our Hereditary commentary. I'm never going to forgive everyone that voted for this movie that made me watch it again, but okay, I did it. I've watched it again. But anyway, as usual, you can find us at supermarcy.com. You can support us and subscribe at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/thesupernetwork. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/sm_supernetwork. Or you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/supermarcy. And you can vote on the polls if you check out our Facebook group, which is Super Network Group on Facebook. And you can find us on YouTube at the Super Network YouTube channel. There's so many things, there's so many places where we are at, and I keep forgetting these last two. You can find us on Instagram. Yes, we are on Instagram at the.super.network. And we are also on that little thing called TikTok, and you can find us under the username at the Super Network. We have some funny videos and stuff there. And of course, you can find our podcasts on all leading podcast services such as Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and all the rest, because there's too many to name. Bede, what about you?
If people want to find me, personally, they can find me at my Twitter page at twitter.com/Bejamite, or you can find all my writings at my personal writers page on Facebook at facebook.com/TerribleAussie. And of course, you can find always all my work over at supermarcy.com with past reviews, columns and whatnot. Got some more stuff in the works, so keep a lookout for those very soon.
Yes, and with that, we bid you farewell. Thank you once again for listening and supporting us and voting and all the rest. Until next time, I have been Super. Beat has been terrible. Goodbye, everyone.
See you, everybody. Bye.
I just don't want to put any more stress on my family.